freaking out of!
This is Brock and Saul.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? Okay. All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Saul, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Saul. Good to be with you today on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. I was not supposed to be here today, like Dante and Clerks, but you know what?
Sometimes you move things around.
Sometimes you change your entire life around
Yes. In
order to come in and talk about the Mariners. Because when your team finds itself not in first place, they've been in first place before, alone in first place, on June 4th.
Yeah.
You find a way. Like, you just, you know, maybe you bring your kids with you to work. Maybe you keep your kid out of school for an hour or so, even though that's, like, considered some sort of, I don't know. I don't know whether it's illegal so much as, like, not what you're supposed to do. My wife is out of town. I was supposed to bring the kids to school today. And when you call the line to say, hey, I'm going to be bringing my daughter in at, you know, 9:30 instead of at 8 o'clock when school starts.
Yeah.
There's definitely a whole message that's like, vacation is no longer an acceptable reason to keep your kid out of school.
Well, how about the Mariners being in first place in June? Is that good enough for you?
I started.
For the first time in June since 2003.
I needed to say something on the message. So rather than actually telling them why I was keeping my daughter out of school for an hour, I just played them this.
Yeah!
And I figured they'd understand.
And the vice principal was thumbs up.
I was like, oh, yeah, sure you can. Take them out.
The little
totally dump, get it.
The double thumbs up.
The VP and the principal in their offices this morning like, hey, I hope this continues.
That little double thumbs up. Does it have an element of sort of like, it's similar to starting a bike a little bit, like revving the throttle on a motorcycle?
The great thing about it is each player has their own take on it.
Yes.
They add their own style.
Whose is the worst? Is it Nelson Cruz? Just
Nelson
say yes.
Cruz was a little bit like a milkmaid. Like he was kind of like it was.
Nelson should not be doing that. Like everyone else it kind of works for, and Nelson's just kind of like, it's like Frankenstein doing it.
He just slid in a second, okay? He ran a long way and he belly
flopped. The helmet was down over his eyes. Yes. He just gave it. It was amazing.
He gave it his best shot.
The best teams, the teams you remember forever, the teams you fall in love with are the ones that surprise you the most. Would you agree with that?
Mm.
The teams that you don't always expect, the teams that come out of nowhere, the teams that are not always the norm, the ones that have been predicted to be great forever, often they're the ones that you end up falling the most in love with. They're the ones where you want to do the double thumbs up for yourself. Like a lot of teams have their own little move and you're like, oh, cool, they've got their little thing. And when it's your team that's come out of nowhere that has surprised you, that you thought would win 70 to 75 games and right now is on a pace to win 102.
That's it.
Those are the teams that you just completely want to jump aboard and love forever. And I wasn't here in 1995. I've heard a little bit about it. I've listened to the broadcast once or twice.
Have you?
And by all accounts, that's a team that's similar to that. Not that there was zero expectation, but they came out of nowhere. They were back in the standings and found a way to come roaring in at the very end. And that's why you fall in love with the team forever. Now, in their case, they're the first one, and there's a bunch of other reasons. I don't mean to say this is the same thing. It's not. But don't you think that's always the thing you will cherish and remember? Is, man, I didn't think this team had it. And every single night they find a way to defy expectations.
Well, and I think I would double down in this market in that way. This market that likes being the underdog, that likes to play that card. If we don't get any respect, and we ran that for an awful long time with the other really successful team in town. And yeah, I think there is some beauty in that. And I would also say that you fall in love with the teams that invite you in. And this team invites you in. It's got a bunch of personalities that want you to come aboard, that want to express themselves and show it, right? It's not just not a bunch of just kind of stiffs and just kind of doing their thing and kind of remove the fans.
It's not Dustin Ackley looking like it's an actual, like he's going through surgery to have to play out at second base or left field for a little while. They're excited. They're having a good time, and winning is a big part of that. This was an awesome weekend, man. A sweep of Tampa Bay. I got to watch almost every inning of it this weekend, which was great. And I'll tell you, I just started going through favorite moments out of this one, and it's hard to pick one because they're really, I mean, I came up with, what, seven or eight that I ended up texting or emailing you last night. But as you start to look at them, one of the things I wanted to try to put together was not just what was the greatest moment in the moment, but which ones had some meaning, which ones were indicative of what this team is all about, that type of stuff. And so, I'll just read them to you. I mean, I have Haniger's walk-off and Felix finishing the eighth and Zunino from behind the plate gunning out Robert. I mean, there were so many of these things that were awesome. But as I look through it, and I have sound for all of it. Like, I want to play you all of this great play-by-play of all these really cool moments that we had, right? I mean, this was probably the best single moment.
Here's the stretch and the 3-2 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right center field. Smith to the warning track to the wall. Goodbye, baseball. A walk-off winner for Mitch Haniger. Mitch Haniger with his 12th home run of the season at opposite field. Home run to right center. The Mariners win it. 4-3 in the bottom of the 13th inning, and Haniger is getting mobbed at home plate by his teammates. Holy smokes.
I mean, that one was great, right? Certainly made me think this.
That was Oppo on a very cool night at that point. So one of the deepest parts of that entire ballpark.
There's no joke.
That was some juice.
On a line, too. Not a high.
How his left ankle does that. It's just absurd. Salk, you would be on crutches in a wheelchair.
How dare you?
If your ankle moved the way that Haniger's does on some of those swings, he is just inverted.
You see, because we were inverted.
Yes.
I will say that. Do you think he set the pitcher up for that with the play before? With the swing before? The swing before on the 3-1 count, he swung as hard as he possibly could, looking to deposit it into left field.
Yes.
Right? Do you think there was any part of him that set the guy up? Like, all right, I'm going to swing as hard as I can, and we know how pitchers tend to react to that, and maybe now he goes away from me, and I take the—I don't know. I maybe it's just two swings, and I'm completely reading into it, and he's a young player, and maybe he doesn't have that in him. But you always kind of hear these rumors about the best. You always used to hear about Manny Ramirez setting pitchers up, like, oh, he'll take this swing early in the count looking for this pitch, and you know it would get that, and then he'd take it together or whatever. I don't know. It made me wonder whether or not Haniger did that. I mean, look, Felix finishing the eighth inning yesterday, that's going to pay as long-term dividends as anything that happened this weekend.
Here's the windup and the 3-2 pitch. Breaking ball swing and a ground ball to third. Up with the ball is Seager. Toss across in time to get Robertson, and that will end the inning. Felix Hernandez, 8 very strong innings this afternoon, giving his ball club a chance to come from behind and try to win it late in the game.
Pretty good foreshadowing from Riz, almost like he knew what was about to happen. Felix went 8 innings of one-run ball.
Yeah, he hadn't gone more than 6 all season long, and he went 8 innings, and you saw him as charged up. We'll get to him in about 20 minutes, and we'll have a full-on discussion about that guy because he was right at the center of so much of the emotion and conversation of last week. And, yeah, Mike, you could continue to go through all of these. I'll tell you, my favorite moment was Friday night, and it was actually after that Haniger home run, and all the media was still there. It's 12:30 at night, and bam, here come all the tweets, right? And there's D. Gordon out hitting on a tee at Safeco Field, shaking his own balls. Not with 5 equipment guys out there, and not just, I think, posing for the cameras, just out there doing his thing after hitting the cage, taking his tee out there. I will find my baseball. I went 0-for-6. Don't like what that felt like. Want to flush that. Want to continue to work. And, man, that may be one of my favorite images of this entire season.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't have sound of it, but there's no doubt that goes on the list, Brock, and for a couple of different reasons. It's 12:30 at night. It's late. They got to be at the ballpark the next day, and there's D. Gordon just you know, out there hitting off the tee. And I found myself thinking, and we'll come back to this point later, baseball players send each other signals all the time. It's a game built on that, right? The catcher signals the pitcher. Everybody, the signal who's going to do this. You get the wheel play. You send signs from the third base coach into the hit. I mean, there's a million different times you signal without words in baseball. And I think baseball players and organizations send signals to each other a lot through the media, through their actions. They never talk directly to each other. That's why Howdy got himself in trouble with Scott Servais for making fun of managers for that.
Yeah, that's true.
D. Gordon doesn't go out there and do that unless he's trying to send a signal, right? I mean, he's trying to send his team a signal, and I think that signal's about working hard. Hey, follow my lead, man. If I go 0-for-6, I'm going to go out there and bust my tail the next day or even late that night, because those are the little things it takes for us to get to where we want to go. And he comes out, singles in his first at-bat the next day, comes up with a huge base hit yesterday to drive in the winning run. I don't know whether there's a specific, you know, correlation between one and the other, but if you're trying to tell your – that's what chemistry is. Chemistry is we all want to come together, have fun, and work hard. It's not just the little thumbs up. Yep. It's let's get to the ballpark early because we love being around each other, and hard work is going to pay off.
and doing whatever it takes.
It's not missing voluntary workouts. It's volunteering in the middle of the night to go take some extra balls off a tee. That is chemistry. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
The way that Felix commanded his pitches last night was, who in the heck is that guy on the mound? I couldn't figure it out.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Up first, the Mariners are number one. They're in first place. It's June 4th. So it's only June 4th, but also, hey, it's June 4th. The Mariners are alone in first place in the AL West. They sweep the Rays over the weekend, finish their homestand 8-2. They're two blown saves away from a perfect 10-0 homestand. How about that? Mitch Haniger, a walk-off home run on Friday night. Marco Gonzalez was fantastic, going 6 2/3 on Saturday. And Felix wasn't perfect, but I'll tell you what, that was the model for Felix's future that we saw yesterday. 8 innings, 1-run ball. Mariners come back late to win it, get a sweep. Houston loses a pair, and guess what? You are alone in first place.
Alone in first place for the first time since June of 2003. Someone on this show was calling Dice Right, Slant, Blunt, Check with me, Alert, Quick Game back in 2003, and now he is screaming at his TV each and every day as this team continues to find unique ways to win. And pitching and defense go a long way. It's been the creed in baseball for a long time, kind of like run game and defense in football. Wins you championships. If you pitch and you play defense, and then let's throw in a little clutch hitting, and then let's throw in a little bit of speed, and let's throw in some of the elements that this pretty darn complete roster has, you find yourself in a position that nobody did, that nobody picked, that nobody thought they could be, especially without Robbie Cano, but they find themselves right there on their way to Houston this afternoon.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
After a full week of criticism and judging by the texts, the tweets, and even the calls to this show, Brock, there are a lot of people pretty fed up with Felix Hernandez as of last week. Well, he went out and answered all the critics, all the haters, and everybody else. 8 innings of 1-run ball on his way to his 6th win of the year. Here's what I liked about Felix. He wasn't perfect. He wasn't dominant. But at the end of the day, the numbers were exactly what you're hoping for. And isn't that exactly the pitcher we want and expect him to become? Nobody thinks Felix is going to go through these 8 innings, strike out 12, and keep everybody off base the entire time. That's not the pitcher he is anymore. What you're expecting is that he can find ways to wiggle out of a few jams. He did exactly that. And that he can use his sinker, get some ground balls, occasionally get a strikeout when he really needs one. And that's the model for Felix's future that I think we saw on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think most. Yesterday. Yeah, and I think most encouraging to me, Mike, is he got stronger as that game went along. And that Skipper gained a little bit of trust and handed him the ball in the 7th. And, oh, you want to go out for the 8th? And handed him
that
the ball in the
8th.
The 8th definitely did.
Yeah,
I don't think the 7th did because of his pitch count. And he was managing it. And he was pitching to contact. And he was doing all the things, spinning the ball, that we've heard about for years, really, the last couple of years, to just make that commitment to doing it. But to see him get stronger as that game went along, it's been some time since we've seen that. And, man, that was a welcome sight.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, the Huskies are on a roll, like all of them, it seems. While we sit around and wait for football season to start, the spring sports are killing it. UW's softball team, women's softball team, begins the 3-game national championship series tonight against Florida State. Tremendous accomplishment for them. And meanwhile, the baseball team won their preliminary grouping, so they're going to advance to their very first super regional in program history.
Yeah, I don't ever remember a stretch like this. I don't remember a stretch where the football team is a legitimate title contender at Pac-12 and then ultimately gets to the Fiesta Bowl. So you have all of that exposure. A basketball team goes and wins at Kansas. It's one of the more pleasant surprises, nearly makes a tournament. And then, in the spring, let's take baseball that has never been to a super regional in the history of the school. And now they got a pretty good matchup as Cal State Fullerton upset the number 2 seed Stanford. They've got every opportunity to win this, play in the College World Series, which is exactly what the women are doing, playing for a national title beginning here tonight at 4 o'clock. So it just continues, as Dave Niehaus would say with the Mariners.
Sure
it
would.
It just continues, and for the Husky Athletics this year, man, it's been pretty a year cool. That just continues.
Very, very cool. All right, those are three things you need to know every day at 7:10. We'll kind of keep phone lines open throughout the morning here, 206-421-3776. If you guys want to jump in on anything, talk some Mariners, express your excitement. 8 o'clock, we'll sort of have a dedicated time for you guys to talk about some of your favorite moments of the weekend. But in the meantime, phone lines, of course, will be open. 206-421-3776. Would you bring back your board?
It's in the car.
Okay. We got the board. We have Brock's special board, the top five callers.
Yeah, there's movement on it.
There's movement.
Well, you remember Friday, what happened.
We did have something pretty incredible on Friday.
I mean, Friday the guy called.
Let's play that at 7:30, because it was one of the better calls. We had the guy who called the Bruce Irvin pick years ago. That's probably the best.
That was Adam, yeah.
The best foreshadowing we've ever had on this show. But I thought the guy over the weekend was pretty darn good as well, because he called this. He called that they were number one. He said they'd be number one, and he kind of nailed it. We'll play up 7:30 right now, the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I couldn't be better.
You good? Enjoy the weekend?
I had such a great, wonderful weekend. My wife is out of town. I was alone with the kids. We had a blast together. I wasn't supposed to come into work today, but what, are you going to take the day off when the Mariners are number one? You can't do that.
No.
You got to come in. I feel like you. I don't have time to not take. I don't have time for this day off. I got to come in and work today. It's too important.
It is. I mean, that was a great weekend, no doubt. And I think the return of Felix was probably one of the keys.
Was that your favorite part?
Probably, yeah. Because, again, he only threw like three fastballs in the first inning. I mean, you can see that whatever Mel Stottlemyre started telling him to do in preparation for the game, he did.
Yeah, what's standing out most to you? How is this team doing it, John? We're going to get in this conversation at 8. And, you know, you love the numbers, and you've got your baseball database as well, and you crunch all of them. It's not necessarily supposed to look like 15 games over 500. So how are they doing it?
Well, I think they're doing it with the great decisions by Jerry DePoto. When you think about the fact that he's now changed this from a team that had great hitting, and I say had until they start getting some of the guys back, you know, it's now going to have to try to rely on the bullpen, but he's totally redone the bullpen for the most part. I mean, Edwin Diaz, of course, has been, I think, the MVP, you know, with his ability to get these saves. I mean, we had a couple glitches here, but still 22 saves is impressive. But, you know, when you start to see now there's more powerful arms in the bullpen, you know, they've now taken a group that, you know, had a couple guys out there with 95 to 97 miles an hour. Now there's about five. And so that's working well. And if you can get into the seventh or eighth inning, at least this team now has a chance to make the 17 comebacks that they can have.
Yeah, been pretty stinking awesome. There's no doubt about it. I think the practice opened once again to the media today and Thursday, John. I'm going to find my way out to Seahawk practice. What, just a couple weeks left now in the entire offseason, huh?
That really is. Yeah, 14th is it. That's where everybody gets their mini camps done. So four teams wrap up this Thursday, New England included in that group. I guess maybe Tom Brady may show. But, yeah, we're down to the very end of the offseason programs.
Got any further sense as to whether or not Earl will be there once this thing becomes involuntary?
No guess. I just get the feeling, you know, from either Bradley McDougal and maybe from Pete Carroll, there's a chance he could be there next Tuesday for the OTAs. That, I think, could be a possibility.
Is that a mandatory OTA or
still mandatory? Okay, no, I'm sorry, the mandatory mini camp.
Mandatory mini camp. You think there's a chance he'll be there?
I think there's a chance. I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, Cam was there for that, right? I mean, before Cam held out in training camp, he showed up for mandatory mini camp.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, in fact, and you notice Marshawn Lynch used to show up for mandatory minicamp. He didn't do anything, but at least, you know, he may go stand with the defensive linemen.
Right.
You know, but he was there because you get fined if you don't. Not that it's a big fine, but no, I think there's a chance that Earl could be there.
I had somebody ask me this weekend about Cam and whether or not Cam was going to play. And for whatever reason, I have this kind of gut feeling, and there's no truth. Like, I don't have any information. I have this kind of gut feeling Cam's going to try to give it a shot.
Yeah. Would this information change it if I told you that someone that saw him this weekend and said, man, he looked really thin, that he just was nowhere near like that large and in charge guy?
That might change my gut a lot.
Should I have given you that information before the show began?
It's the kind of information I could have used, like, I don't know, 30 seconds ago, Brock.
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. So define thin. Does that mean he's in great shape?
No, he may be in pretty good shape, but just not in that football, like, big. Just, you know, when you saw Cam Chancellor walk in a room, you're like, uh-oh. Yeah. That is is the enforcer. And, yeah, walked in a room and was like, wow, that looks like a guy that may not be playing football again. Now, a guy that is in charge, a guy that is Mr. Unlimited. What did you think of the latest version of this, John?
Unlimited.
Unlimited.
Yeah.
Hey, babe, how they say that in French?
Unlimited.
Okay. Pate.
Yo.
I didn't say that thing in Fiji, bro.
Unlimited.
What they say in German?
Unbegrenzt.
Spanish? Ilimitado. Yeah, ilimitado.
How do they say Mr. Unlimited in Braddock, PA?
They usually don't mention it.
Probably smart.
Yeah, probably good. I think we're going to leave that all up to Doug Baldwin and everybody.
I'm sure.
Now that more of this is coming out, more they're going to be making jokes about it.
I got to tell you, John, I think his devotion to this and dedication is actually bringing me around. The first time I heard it, as Brock can attest, nails on a chalkboard, I said we shall never play this on our show. There's no upside. All it does is make Russell look bad and make people turn off the radio. Uh-huh. But now that he's gone back to it, even after being made fun of by his teammates, even after being made fun of by the media, now that he's like still all in on it.
He went global, bro.
Now it's kind of growing on
he
me.
He went Fijian, he went French, he went Spanish,
I like the creativity.
He went German, he did it all.
I'm kind of in on it now. What do you think?
I'm still on the chalkboard.
All right.
I'm at the chalkboard stage.
Give it time. It might grow on you.
Might.
Kind of like the wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
Wild card. Mr. Professor Clayton.
Yes.
If you had to hunt one animal for food with nothing but a knife and a bow and arrow, what animal would you hunt?
Well, I need something that's not going to attack me, so I need something with a little bit of a meat on it.
Right.
You know,
rabbit?
That's the one I was going to say. But that's you feel bad, you know, cutting up a bunny rabbit. It doesn't.
It's true.
It kind of seems.
How about a jackalope? Maybe that would be
what's
better.
That, a jackalope?
Yeah.
What the heck is that?
Oh, look it up. Google.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I guess the simple thing would just be going for a pig. I mean, you know, because
a boar? I mean, like,
we eat enough pig product anyways, so.
Right, right.
And it's not like, unless it's a boar, the boar's going to come back and get you, but is the pig going to come back?
I don't think
you
hunt pigs. You could hunt a boar, but now you've got some danger.
There are a bunch of feral pigs.
Feral pigs
are a big deal in the
South.
Aren't
they called boars?
They
no,
have shows
called
about it.
Feral
Wild
pigs.
Hoggers, lady hoggers.
Yes.
It's a big deal. Like, they ruin people's crops. Like,
and
they have to eradicate
are
them.
Like, big.
It's a big
that
deal.
Sounds dangerous,
John, they are big.
I don't know if you could handle that, John. I'd stick with the rabbit.
They swim great distances.
What?
Yeah, feral pigs.
Well, here's where I feel so bad about the rabbit. We have like two baby bunny rabbits kind of going right in our yard here. So it's like it just feels bad going.
I'm with you.
Couldn't imagine.
They're just so cute.
Yeah, I don't see John hunting anything. At least not until pigs swim.
I can go hunting in a restaurant.
Yeah, true.
All right, goodbye, John.
Thanks,
thank you.
AC.
Have a great rest of your day, John Clayton Show. Of course, at 10 o'clock today. And then 4 o'clock with Danny Dave Moore. Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate the late courtesy laugh back there.
We had a late.
I did.
That guy brings it around.
That guy, he's the difference maker.
He's sort of like the what's up guy.
Yes, the
right?
Budweiser.
He's sort of like the Budweiser what's
up.
Hey, Dookie. Like
what's up?
He's sort of like Dookie. All right, Russell, you won me over. I just want to say it. I'm now in your camp. I'll say it with you loud and proud, man. Unlimited first place for the Mariners right now. The Mariners are playing unlimited defense with unlimited pitching. Unlimited wins for the Mariners. Unlimited sweeps. And an unlimited ace, the king. Next, I'm Brock and Salk.
I sit up there over the bullpen, high-fiving dudes like I always do, but my goodness.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Here's the windup and the 3-2 pitch. Breaking ball, swing, and a ground ball to third. Up with the ball is Seager. Toss across in time to get Robertson, and that will end the inning. Felix Hernandez, 8 very strong innings this afternoon, giving his ball club a chance to come from behind and try to win it late in the game.
Raise your hand if you saw 8 one-run innings coming for Felix Hernandez. I did not. I will keep my hands firmly planted near my sides. Now, I do that generally anyway, just because I don't need you to see the pit sweat. But I'm not going to raise my hand because I was not on the list of people who saw that coming. Lydia, do you see 8 innings coming for Felix this weekend? Do you have that predicted? You're a very positive person. Did you see 8-1 run innings for Felix in the Cards for this weekend?
No. No. If I was going to be totally honest, no.
No, not even close.
Was hoping for six.
Kyle?
I was hoping for six.
Any part of that?
Zero.
Pouty?
Yeah, I'd been predicting that for a little while. I thought he was due.
Due is right. Yes, I would say he was definitely due. Brock, that was an old school performance from Felix in terms of the results, but a new school performance for Felix in terms of how he got there.
Yeah, it was cool listening to Shannon Dreyer post game talking about this. And I'm sure over the course of the week and leading up to Felix's next start, it will be a continued conversation. But Shannon said, yeah, there was concerted effort in that bullpen to follow a script. And that just resonated for me because that's exactly what we used to do. West Coast system and everything else, you scripted your first 15 plays, and they scripted that first inning. They wanted just a couple fastballs, and not just a script, Mike. Then they went into that bullpen session, and they threw it. This is what it's going to look like. This is how we want you to set this up. This is how we want to try to work these counts, and then to go out and actually have a dress rehearsal, a full dress rehearsal, so that when you step on that stage, dominate. And that's what he did in that first inning.
Yeah, Scott was pretty darn impressed, especially with the way he started.
Yeah, and Felix, there's a lot of conversations that have been had here since his last couple starts, trying to how to get over the hump in the first inning, which is one hurdle he wanted to put to bed early in this ball game, and he did. And but I thought his stuff was good. But he came out firing everything right at him right out of the get go. Wanted to get deep in the ball game, kept the pitch count in check, so it allowed him to go eight innings.
Yeah, that 12.75 ERA in the first inning, untenable. It was just going to be untenable. And really the only one, Mike, is he continued to look around and they just continued to build on it Friday and Saturday. And Marco was brilliant in what, one earned run in his last 25 innings? You look around at the rest of the kids on the playground and they're all getting it done and you're not.
Very motivating. There's no doubt. I mean, and for a prideful guy like Felix, who has Hall of Fame type credentials, has been as good as he is for as long as he has been. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's got to be a huge motivating factor. I hope if, as they continue, Scott mentioned some of the conversations, I hope one of them is about what Blake Snell did yesterday versus what Felix did yesterday. Because if you turn that game on anywhere near the beginning, you saw one of the most dominant pitching performances you'll ever see.
Shorewood's finest, baby.
Blake Snell, to start that game, was as good as it gets. He was James Paxton only better, striking out the first seven guys of the game, and it wasn't really even close. I mean, he's blowing 95-97 past everybody, a slider from God knows where. I mean, he got all four pitches. He was as good as it gets. And in the fourth inning, he had thrown more than 70 pitches.
Yep.
I mean, say what you want, he was the better pitcher for the first few innings of that game. Doesn't give up a run. But unfortunately for him, has to exit early. And in the meantime, Felix makes it through eight by conserving his pitches, by throwing ground balls, right? Got to always come back to what they said in Bull Durham. Strikeouts are fascist. Ground balls are democratic. Everybody gets to be a part of the ground ball. They're democratic and strikeouts are fascist.
Yeah.
And
strikeouts are like sexy, but they're not the most efficient way to get an out. And reminded of that.
Yeah, and we saw that with Paxton for years, right? We've seen that where he spins so many just strikeout after strikeout after strikeout. But then, somebody has an 8-pitch foul ball at bat. And kudos to the Mariners for doing that.
Kudos to Denard Span specifically for a couple of really good at bats in that game yesterday. Yep. Probably not a surprise that he was the one who ultimately came through with the single they really needed.
The set by Alvarado. And the left-hander delivers. Span with a swing and a ground ball. Base hit in the right field. That's going to score. Romine, tie game. Rounding second. Heading for third. Heredia. The throw to third. Way offline from Gomez. Holy smokes. Span has tied it with an RBI single into right field. It's now the Mariners 1 and the Rays 1.
And right there you knew. Like, oh, they're just going to win this game, right? They came up with the one hit they needed. They'll find a way to win it at this point.
Yep.
Reset. What's your new expectation for Felix? Does that change anything we talked about? I mean, last week people are talking about cutting him. Now what?
The way that Felix commanded his pitches last night was, who in the heck is that guy on the mound? I couldn't figure it out.
Right, not him. He was not
in the heck is that guy? Is he called back?
I figured
since?
It out. I figured it out. I went back and listened.
Yeah, what's his name?
Jake from Puyallup.
Okay.
We need you to call.
Yeah, we miss
Please
Jake.
Be a part of our lives.
Our shining light.
Jake
you
from P-Town.
Are almost he an may... automatic top fiver. Just get on the phone.
Got a chance to get right in there. Now, we did have Adam, who was in Seattle last week. You have Adam's call. So Adam called us on Friday, desperate to get into the top five here. Top five caller list, as Brock keeps to a board on his left here. 206-421-3776. Adam called on Friday and was determined to find himself in the top five. Adam's in Seattle. Good morning, Adam. What argument do you want to make?
Good morning. This is my third time calling this week, and I got the best call to get on the board.
What do you got?
All right, it's time.
Yes, it is.
Come in on Monday's show, and all the focus and discussion and the buzz around the city will be the first place division-leading Mariners.
Ooh. Wow. Why do you say that?
Yeah, right now the Mariners are just one game back of the division-leading Astros.
Yeah.
They have a tough series with the Red Sox. They'll fall to them, and the Mariners will take care of business and sweep the Rays, and we'll be the first place in our division.
He was right. Sit down and write it, Brock. Write his name on the board.
Congratulations. You've made the top five.
Top five.
Adam in Seattle.
Adam has. Number one, no. Number two, yes.
Wow, he displaces Kendall.
Yes.
Very impressive.
Dang.
Kendall moves to three. Isaiah moves to four. Steve in T-Town is still rounding out the top five.
All right, so let me ask you this question. It can go for any of the callers out there as well. What's your new expectation for Felix? What does yesterday do for you? How much does it change?
Felix should be able to do that against anybody outside the division. I think in his division, you have played these guys for so many years, Mike, and they know the scouting report. They know the spin. They've seen it so many times. But people outside of their division, whether it's an interleague play, whether it's in the Central, whether it was again yesterday in the East with Tampa, you should be able to put together quality plus-plus starts, you know, six plus-plus innings and not have your normal, you know, what it's been through the first dozen of five innings and 3.5 to 4 runs. So I would expect to see that again. I don't think we're going to see an ERA that ends this season below 4. I think that is unrealistic.
That would surprise me.
Overall, I think that's unrealistic, but can it be in the
low fours?
Could
he have a 4 ERA from here on out?
Yes.
I mean, I think that's all your – so what your final numbers are going to be? You've already kind of torched them for the year.
But it'll be on one guy.
Can you have a 4 ERA from here on out?
But it will be on one guy. It's not going to be on
Mike Zunino,
and it's not going to be on Zunino, and it's not going to be on Service, and it's not going to be on anybody else. It's going to be on him and whether he's got the focus, Mike, to do that for the remaining, 17 starts? That he's going to have roughly.
And you're not going to see 8 innings, 1 run from him every time. But if you can see those 6 innings, 2 runs, and give your team a shot, even 7 innings, 3 runs, throw those in there, those quality starts, Brock, every time you do that, you're going to give this team a shot to win.
Yes. I thought through that game yesterday, both as watching it and then ultimately listening to some of it on the radio as well. I thought of our conversation last week where I tried to put you on the spot as much as I could. Just tell me about his stuff. And to listen to Blowers, and to listen to Shan, and to listen to the rest, and we'll have Ryan Roland Smith in the 9 a.m. hour as well, and I'll put him on that same spot. That stuff yesterday, that spin, that changeup, that curveball, that spin is still good enough in this league and in this rotation to be your number 2 or 3 guy.
Even with an 87-mile-an-hour fastball, that's just how good a secondary stuff can be. 206-421-3776, Mitch been hanging on in Twin Falls. What's up, Mitch?
What's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, what's on your mind?
Okay, so first, I got a lot of things on my mind. I mean, the Mariners played an awesome weekend. I wanted to talk about Felix, though. I think, like you guys have said, he pitched an awesome inning. We saw him get out of a bases-loaded jam that reminded me of vintage Felix right there.
Yep.
And I think this is building on something you talked about a lot last week, Salk. And I think Mel got to him. I think Scott got to him. And the only way to help build that confidence is they need extensions now.
Yeah, I'm going to talk some more about that today. In fact, I kind of have that set up for 8:30 this morning. It's something I want to get to, but I'm with you. I mean, look, anything you can do to reward these guys, and not just based on the fact that since I said that, they've, lost 2 games? I mean, they've been tremendous ever since then. But based on just what they've done over the course of the 2.5 years leading up to this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Scott's not able to do what he's done this year unless he had spent the time in the first 2 years building the trust and gaining the trust of these players.
I'll spin this back totally selfishly, but the podcast that we've been able to do, the Above and Beyond podcast, Mike, I would have never been able to do it my first few years. Just would not have. Would not have been able to do that relationally with people, to ask questions, to sit there and do it. But for 9 years of sitting in this seat and working along and building some level of relationship with people, we've been able to do it. And it's been an absolute blast and so rewarding. And I think for Scott and for Mel and for Jerry, very similarly. right? This has got to be an absolute blast to see this come together, to see even Felix totally buy in, man. This is the way it's going to be, and we're going to script you for some success. To see the pieces that you bring in. I was telling Lydia this morning, they come in here, Mike, and they want to be a part of it. D wants to be a part of this thing. Dinar wants to be a part of it. Colomay wants to be a part of it. That is a credit to those two. And, yeah, I think you're all right.
We'll talk in some further detail about that at 8:30. It involves a song that was redone in the 90s. It's a whole thing, Rock. I will explain this in great detail at 8:30 this morning. I think you'll love it. You'll be super excited about it. In the meantime, let's ask a couple of football questions and get right back to the baseball and your calls at 8 o'clock. If you want to jump aboard and kind of beat the rush, the question is pretty simple. What was your favorite moment of the weekend? We got a lot of sound to play, and we'll take your calls at 206-421-3776 right after Coors Light's Blue 42. And a lot of pressure on one guy. Next, I'm Rock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U-corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, a quick little bit of football business before we get back to the baseball. I really hope we can light up these phone lines today with your favorite moment of the Mariners weekend. I came in special today. I wasn't supposed to be here today. Nope. Like Dante.
You got the kids back there. Boy, Howdy built them a fort. They're hanging out under the table.
My kids are here at work.
Vice principal called, but no problem. 9:30 is just fine.
Avery is going to be an hour or so late to work because I'm bringing her in just to talk Mariners with you guys today. So please, I hope you guys are on the phone at 8 o'clock or I'm going to be super disappointed in the choices I've made.
They will be.
And mostly my wife is going to be mad at me. So for no other reason, I hope you guys could jump in and be a part of this at 8 o'clock. Your favorite moments of the weekend, 206-421-3776. Brock, I saw you put out a poll on pressure for the Seahawks in 2018. Who do you think faces or is under the most pressure?
Yeah, I think it's clearly Pete Carroll. So there are four choices on that poll. At Brock ESPN, you can go weigh in on that, see if it changes any of the numbers. But I had Pete, I had Russ, I had Shoddy and John Schneider was the fourth one. So I had those four, and Pete Carroll's nearly 50% of that vote.
Really?
As I think he should be. I think we're going to feel this, and I've said this multitude of times, that if you traveled around with me a bit nationally and you chatted with a little more of the national voices, you would hear a lot more of that chatter about Pete, about his tenure, about where it's going. The Colin Cowherds of the world will have all eyes on Pete Carroll and whether or not he can truly reset this thing, or is it going to go down the USC road? You've already seen that narrative. You've already seen people write about it and talk about it. You know, that, yeah, at the end, it just kind of ran out of steam. That, you know, it's tremendous when it's young and it's youthful and you start the whole engine up and everybody buys in. But in the end, kind of like at USC, it just ran out of gas. And now he's made his coordinator changes. He's turned a bunch of this roster. He let go of a lot of veteran voices. The thing got out of whack a year ago. And can Pete, and does Pete have the capability at this stage to turn it around? I think the most pressure clearly falls on him.
He'd be fourth on my list here.
Come on.
Yeah. I'd go Russell Wilson, Brian Schottenheimer, John Schneider, Pete Carroll.
Wow.
That would be my list.
Well, Danny and I will debate that a whole lot more tomorrow. Maybe you and I will on Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't even because I don't see any pressure for Pete. I don't understand it at all. He would be last on my list here. All right, question number two. You talked about how great everything is going at UW with the women's softball team on their way to start off a three-game, best-of-three World Series tonight against Florida State, and the men's baseball team getting to the Super Regional for the first time in their history. But since this is a football segment, Brock, as you look at the UW football team poised to make a run here at the national title contention, what will set them apart?
Yeah, they got two position groups, Mike, that I think are in any level of football, but especially the collegiate level, that are as good as anybody in the country. And I don't know the last time I could say that. And this is Alabama, this is Clemson, this is everybody else. That their offensive tackles, Caleb McGarry, on one side of right tackle, does not get near the credit. Trey Adams on the left side. Those two guys are as good a tackle combination as anybody in college football. They'll both be seniors next year. They'll both be drafted. I think they'll both be drafted in the top three rounds. And you just wait till Caleb McGarry, kind of like Vita Vea, took off last this offseason. He will next year. Those two tackles, as good as they've had at Washington since Supele Malamala and Lincoln Kennedy in their national title year as a combo. And then equally, they're two corners. right? It was just a couple years ago with Sydney and Kevin, but you now look at what Jordan Miller and Byron Murphy have. And I was looking at some advanced stats. You know, they were two of the top 23 cover corners in America. Jordan Miller was in the top five of passer rating against, and Byron was in the top 25. Those two come back to school. When you can lock it down on the edge and you can protect the edge of your offensive line, you're a difficult team to beat. And why I think they're the Pac-12 preseason, will be the runaway preseason pick in the Pac-12.
All right, question number three. I don't know whether he's going to make the team or not. Certainly the salary does not dictate that he will to Brock. But if Brandon Marshall does make this team in place here for a year, what could he do for Russell?
Yeah, he could change some of the national voices when it comes to Russell. Brandon's loud, man. He's not going to be doing his showtime around the NFL show. He's not going to be commuting back to New York. A lot easier to do that with the Giants and Jets. But he's got quite a presence, I think, quite a foothold in the media and in those media relationships. He's not one that's afraid to share his opinion. Yeah, and I think if he does make this team and he resurrects his career and Russell continues to make plays and finds Brandon Marshall 6, 7, 8 touchdowns, so guess what? Brandon can make another 7 figures in all of those incentives and escalators. I think that is the one guy, maybe one of the louder voices in all the NFL that he could have on his side. You remember some of the crazy talk with Brandon last year about Odell Beckham being the best player in all of the NFL. I mean, he's not afraid to give credit to his teammates. But if Russell does what he's capable of doing and puts on a show and Mr. Marshall makes a team and is a part of it, get ready to hear maybe the biggest cheerleader offensively that Russell's had in his tenure.
And what if he doesn't?
If he doesn't make the team?
No, what if he does and doesn't say much about Russell?
Well, Mr. Unlimited will take care of that.
Ah. That's why I think Russell's under the most pressure. That's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. If I'm looking at somebody who's under the most pressure, Russell's a year away from having that conversation about his next contract. Yep. They didn't spend a lot of money, certainly, or resources on the wide receiving core. The offensive line's going to look pretty similar, and yet he's going to be expected to carry a huge amount of the load. Yeah, they're going to run the ball, and if they have any success doing it, the expectation is he's going to take the passing game on himself and just kind of elevate it with a good running game.
I would get
it. The defense may not be the same as it once was. He's going to be asked to have more comeback wins, to do more than he's ever been asked to do before. He doesn't have Daryl Bevel to blame anymore. Like, I feel like Russell's by far under the most pressure.
He's my number two.
Are you a franchise quarterback or not? Like, if you are, this is when you prove it.
Yep. Yeah, but everything that you said, an O-line that is creaky and not added to, a running back position group that's never been able to stay healthy, receivers that you didn't add to, they're going to be enough kind of, hey, Pete and John, like, what are we doing here?
That's why I would put John ahead also. I mean, and I love John. I think he's done a great job, but after a couple of drafts that didn't produce all that much.
We're not talking football.
I could talk about this all day.
We're
not talking
football.
That's a hot take from you and, like, 40% of your audience.
We're talking baseball.
All right, let's do that.
That's enough of that.
Let's get you guys on the horn. 206-421-3776. It's as good a weekend as we can have around here, man. Another weekend sweep for the Mariners. What was your favorite part? We've got ours. It's all next on Brock and Salk.